That's the indicator. Parshas Bahar opens with a discussion of Shemitah, of the year in which the fields in the Holy Land of Israel lie fallow. And we also talk about the Jubilee, which is what happens when you accumulate seven Shemitot. And there are more halachas about how the land of Eretz Yisrael has to be treated in a special way. Now, near the end of the first reading, the Torah begins to talk about the concept of taking advantage of another, cheating in business, misrepresentation. And Torah talks about the sale of real estate. This is kind of Shemitah related because the sale always reverts back to its original owner. And then the Torah comes along and says, once again, a second time, and this is near the end of the second reading, chapter 25, verse 17. The Torah says, V'lo'soinu ish es amisoi. Literally translates as, a person shall not take advantage of his fellow. V'yereisa melekecha, he should revere Hashem, ki ani Hashem melekechem, because I am the Lord your God. So the obvious question here is that this business of not taking advantage, the beginning of verse 17, v'lo'soinu, the idea of hainoa is taking advantage of somebody else, whether it's to exploit naivete or to take advantage of somebody's ill-advised knowledge of business matters or something like that. The Torah already says it. The Torah talks about that in verse 14 in the very same reading. In fact, the Torah says, Al tonu. End of verse 14 of chapter 25 is, Al tonu, do not take advantage of ishechav, or swindle, or cheat, and so on and so forth. So the question is, if it says this already, and Torah says, we're not to take advantage of business and misrepresent, or make believe the product is a product, or the price is a price, when in fact it may be neither, this is a violation of the Torah. So why is it that in verse 17, the Torah has to repeat itself? And this time it doesn't just say you shouldn't take advantage and exploit. Here it says, V'liseinu ish hazechav, now we have an addition, V'yareisa melikechav, this is, you better revere me, Hashem says. Ki ani Hashem alikechav, because I am the Lord your God. So let's take a look in Rashi. Rashi says that V'liseinu ish hazechav, that here when the Torah says, you shall not cheat or take advantage or exploit your fellow, that this speaks about a different kind of oino'o. Oino'o is the noun that's used to describe this ill behavior, this bad behavior. So the Torah says that you shan't swindle or take advantage of your fellow. Says Rashi, answering the implicit question of the seeming repetition of what's already mentioned in verse 14, now in verse 17, the Torah re-emphasizing. Kan, says Rashi here, hizir alaynoz dvorim. Here the Torah is speaking to you about exploitation and taking advantage of a person with verbiage. What does that mean? How do you swindle somebody or take advantage of them or exploit them with verbiage? So Rashi says, Shalay yaknit, that you shall not needle eschavede, your fellow, v'loy yasi enu, and you shall not kind of guide him in a direction, which means to give him bad advice, eitzo she'en hegenesle, giving him advice which is not helpful, in fact, which will be harmful. And so why would you give him that advice? Why would you give somebody bad advice? Why would somebody do it? Because they stand to benefit, right? I say, you think this is a good purchase? It's a great purchase, great piece of real estate. Yeah, sure, because you have a house to sell over there and you don't tell him that. So you give him a bad advice, you know it's bad advice, you know it's a terrible deal, you get him into this, sorry, I thought it was a good deal. I don't know, you asked my opinion, I told you what I thought. And Rashi right away interrupts and says, aha, somebody's going to say, mi edeya niskavanti lilo. How do you know I meant ill? Why are you judging me? Torah says, not supposed to judge. How do you know I meant ill? I thought it was good. You shouldn't ask my opinion in the future. You know what? I'm offended. I'm offended that you're angry at me, and I'm not giving you my opinion anymore. So how do you deal with that? Lekach nemar, that's why it says, v'yareisa melekecha. That's why it says, he knows. He knows. You can tell everybody else stories. You can even tell yourself stories. But he knows. So if you have Yerushalayim, you'll behave like a mensch. You'll do the right thing. He is Hayodea Machashav Esu Yodea. The one who knows people's innermost thoughts, he knows. Kol Dover HaMasur Lelev. Anything which is found only in the recesses of the heart. She'ein makir ella misha machshava b'libay. The only one who might know the truth, the only one who knows what's in somebody's heart, is the one whose heart it is. Right? So that's the one who's really going to know. So whenever you have a case like that, that's why it says, Ne'emar b'ayi, the pasuk says, v'yareisa melekecha. So what is a noz dvarim? A noz dvarim means to exploit somebody's position of weakness with your verbiage. And maybe it's not business-oriented, although it could be business-oriented also if it's bad advice. But a noz dvarim can mean something as simple as coming to a person who, in the past, you know, didn't behave so nicely. Maybe they were drug addicts. Maybe they did something inappropriate. And you say to the person, it's so good to see you leading a normal life. I'm so proud of you. Look where you were. You were this messed up person. You are kind of totally subsumed into narcotics and the abuse of substances and were so miserable. Look at you, so happy now. The person's turning colors. Did you have to let everybody know? Like, is that really necessary? The person says, oh, I didn't mean to harm you. On the contrary, I want to give you a compliment. I'm trying to say how wonderful you are. I'm extolling your virtues. And the guy says, well, yeah, you offended me. Oh, sorry, I didn't mean that. Yeah, yes, you did. So you use those words. And so, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, V'yareisa melekecha, by Inos Dvarim, specifically, when it comes to Inos moment, it comes to exploitation of taking advantage in a monetary fashion, in a fiduciary way, versus say, what? You knew this wasn't a real Rolex. Yeah, I thought it was. Baloney. Everybody knows you sell watches and you thought you were selling a real watch. You knew it was a fake watch. So you took advantage of somebody's money. You took advantage. You sold somebody a product. You knew it wasn't a product. Person have a very hard time claiming that they did know it was a product. When it comes to verbiage, when it comes to using words, person says, oh, look at you. You used to eat cheeseburgers and now you're learning Torah. Beautiful. A mouth that was full of trefus is now full of Torah. In the meantime, you're embarrassed, you're hurt, you made the person feel uncomfortable, you needled them. So the Torah here says, V'yareisa melekecha. Now, what's really interesting is that the Torah has kind of almost ended the conversation on Shemitah, or so it seems. Right? There was a discussion of the fields lying fallow, and then we went from one Shemitah to seven Shemitahs in the Jubilee year, which also includes the reverting of property. And that's kind of linked to taking advantage of somebody in business, because if you knew the property was going to revert and this person is naive and didn't realize that they're paying a lot of money, but their lease expires in 12 years because the Jubilee is right coming up ahead and you charge them as if it's a 49-year lease, so that's called taking advantage. So there's a relationship, there's a connection. But then the Torah seems certainly to have broken the cadence here by discussing a different kind of Einah, by talking about the idea of exploitation, taking advantage with verbiage. That's what it seems like, right? But the Torah then now continues and says, V'asisem eschukaisai. Here, the rejoinder at the end of the second reading is, you shall do my statutes. V'es mishpatai tishmeru, and my ordinances you should guard. V'asisem eisem, and you should do them. V'yashavtem al ha'oretz lovetach, and then you will dwell securely in the land of Israel. Of course, the word betach means secure, and it is the origin of the word bitachon, which means, in modern Hebrew, security. So God's promising us security in the Holy Land of Israel. And how do we get the security in the Holy Land of Israel? Well, verse 18 says, V'asisem eschukaisai, you do my statutes. And then it says, Mishpatai tishmeru, you keep my laws. And then it says, V'asisem eisem, keep them and do them. So there's a redundancy that has to be explained. And then the Torah concluding with V'yashavtem al ha'aretz levetach, all mitzvahs, some mitzvahs. What are we talking about here? So this is a pasuk, a verse that really requires significant elucidation. So Rashi says that the chukim and the mishpatim that we speak about here are actually directly linked to the concept of Shemitah and Yovel. It's not, even though we seem to have interrupted, go from one ona'a, we talked about another ona'a, another kind of exploitation. The first exploitation and cheating was linked to the notion of the Shemitah and the Jubilee. The second is not necessarily, or even necessarily not. Nonetheless, now the Torah has reverted back to talk about the original concept of Shemitah. Now Rashi doesn't go into the details of V'asisem eschukoi chesai ves mishpatai, which are statutes and which are ordinances. Rabbeinu Bechaya does, though, and he says that Shemitah and Yovel themselves are a chok. That a country shuts down for a year, that no farming should go on for a year. Not that certain fields will be left fallow 1 year and certain fields left fallow another year. That's just good farming practice. But that a whole country shuts down and Israel's gross national product was agriculture. It was once agriculture. It was not the startup nation. It was not high tech. So a country that functioned primarily on agriculture, the country that has this produce and produce that's praised and everybody knows about the Israeli products. So the country that functions in agriculture literally shuts down for a year. You can't do any business. And it actually seems to make no sense whatsoever. And on a literal level, it doesn't make sense. So mitzvahs that don't make sense to us, what do we call them? We call them a chukim. A chuk is a mitzvah that doesn't make sense. What are mishpatim? Mishpatim are rules or ordinances that do make sense to us. So, interestingly, the notion of property reverting back to its original owner, Rabbeinu Bachaya says, is not a chok. It does make sense. The notion of people who are sold into periods of indentured labor, that they should be set free, that does not make sense. It does make sense, he says. That's a mishpat. He says, and the same is true with a noah, with the idea of cheating and swindling. A person could say, well, you're going into business, you do your research. What do you rely on me for? You ask me, I'm allowed to tell you whatever I want. You could technically get away with that. You will not be prosecuted in federal court for giving somebody bad advice. You could be sued, actually, these days, if you willfully give somebody bad advice. But maybe it's not a crime. And you could say, you can claim innocence. I meant to give good advice. I tried my best. I was doing the utmost of my ability. So that's within the realm of a mishpat. It makes sense that a person should be held accountable for advice they give, for hurting somebody, abusing somebody with your words in a public way. It makes sense. And therefore, Rabbeinu Bachaya says, this kind of roundup at the end of the second reading refers to the chukim and mishpatim that are related to Shemitah and to Yovel. Rashi tells us, he doesn't go into those details. I guess he assumes that you could figure that out by yourself, that a country shutting down doesn't really make sense. And the Jubilee, a country shutting down for 2 years, definitely doesn't make sense. But the notion that the economy should be reset and that in the end, whatever gets sold should come back to its original owners because it's an ancestral land, Israel, that goes from generation to generation. Rashi probably figures you can figure that out. But what you must know, he says, is Sheba'avoin Shemitah Yisrael Goylim. That is due to the sin of not keeping the Shemitah that the Jewish people experience exile. How do we know this? Shenemar, because it's going to be written later on in our Parsha. Oz tirtza ha'aretz es shabseisel. And Parsha B'chukos, the next Parsha. Then, he says, the land will desire its rest. It will be fallow. Then it will enjoy its serenity. V'hirtzos es shabseisel. Then the land is going to experience its Shabbat. And this is the period of bad things happening to the Jewish people. This is the verses of Tochacha, of God's rebuke and curses towards the Jewish people, in which he says that all the bad things will happen. And we'll be exiled from the land, and then the land will lie fallow. Because amazingly, Hashem promises that no nation will ever live in our land and build it up. And no nation ever did. The whole Fakestinian thing is fake. It's not true. Plain and simple, it's just not true. There was nobody who built the land up. You read the records of people like Mark Twain who visited the land of Israel in 1880. He says you can go for miles and miles without seeing a soul. Malaria infested swamps. He said desert, dry area, nothing. The whole country was dead. Why? Because Hashem's children weren't there. Hashem's children are not in Hashem's land. The land does not prosper. That's the way it is. So Hashem promises that then, when the Jewish people leave the land of Israel, then the land will lie fallow. Then it will have its Shabbos. And Rashi goes further and he says, "V'shivim shana shel golus bavel," the 70 years of the Babylonian exile, "keneged shivim shmitas shebatel hayu," they correspond to 70 years of shmitah, 70 shmitot that were violated, because in total it was 70 years, 70 shmitot, and tragically, we didn't keep a single one right. There was members of Am Yisrael who violated each and every Shemitah. Rabbeinu Bachaya says, further, he develops what Rashi says further, and he says, it's the lack of observing Shemitah that necessarily brings the people of Israel to disconnect from the land of Israel. And that's why he says the pasuk blesses us. V'yishavtem ha'aretz levetach. Just do these mitzvahs and you will experience the concept of security in the land of Israel. What does it mean, levetach? What does it mean to be secure? The Ohr HaChaim says that nobody will ever covet your land. Imagine that. Imagine we live in the land of Israel. Nobody else wants it. Doesn't happen. As soon as we're in Israel, our neighbors want it. They didn't want it before, but when we're there and it's beautiful, everybody wants it. You have betach, you have security, you have peace. Nobody will bother you. Nobody wants your land. Nobody asks you for anything. So here's the question. Rashi does not explain how Chukosai and Mishpatai is connected to Shemitah. He doesn't explain it. He just says matter-of-factly. It's the Avera of Shemitah that in the end will necessarily cause the Jewish people to be ejected from the land. Rashi doesn't explain the difference of Chukim and Mishpatim. And then he starts telling us this trivia, this piece of information. You should know that the 70 years of Golos Bavel corresponded to 70 years or 70 Shemitah that weren't kept. Really, why is that relevant for Pshat? Why is that important to understand in the Pshat over here that Vasisim is Chukim V'Mishpatai is talking about Shemitah? I can ask you even a better question. Why are we so certain it's about Shemitah? Not everybody agrees it's talking about Shemitah. Some of the Mefarshim suggest that it's talking about Judaism in general. But Rashi seems very certain about this. He says, no, that this is definitely talking about Shemitah, no question. Rabbeinu Bechaya also says very clearly. And he gives us even a business of 70 Shemitot, Galut Bavel the last 70 years. Something seems to be missing over here. What forced Rashi to say this? Really, what forces Rabbeinu Bechaya? So, if you open your Biurim book to page Shin Ayin Daud, here we have a fascinating rumination from the Rebbe, in which he explains to us why it is that Rashi in Pshuta Shal Mikra, and really and truly, ultimately, this explains Rabbeinu Bechaya and others who learn the similar Pshat. So, just before we get into the body of this rumination, I want to tell you that Rabbeinu Eliyahu Mizrahi is one of the chief commentators on Rashi. He was very bothered by this also. So how do we know what Shemitah? It doesn't say. It says Chukosai Mishpatai. It's very broad terms. And he says that since the psukim, all the verses from the beginning of Parshas Bahar are talking about Shemitah, then it only makes sense that this must be talking about Shemitah as well. Just, that's what this is about. It's one thing leading to the next. Of course, there's a big problem with that supposition. And the problem with that supposition is that, in fact, we did interrupt. We did interrupt the cadence of the verses. Yes, it's true the verses were talking about Shemitah. And it's because of Shemitah that we ended up talking about Jubilee, Yovel. And it's because of the Yovel that we ended up talking about Einah, taking advantage of somebody in business. That's all true. However, ultimately, the truth also is we interrupted with a different kind of Einah, with a different kind of taking advantage. Yes, I know the different kind of Einah is linked to another Einah, and that the Einah of Karka, the taking advantage and swindling somebody by selling him a property when really it's going to expire soon, that's wrong, and you're not allowed to do it, and it's connected to Shemitah. Okay, that's fine. And because of one Einah, I ended up talking about the other Einah from Einah's Mamon, from the discussion that's monetary related. I ended up talking about the Einah, ended up talking about the taking advantage and the swindling and cheating using verbiage. Okay. That's how we get. That's the domino effect. That's how one thing leads to the next. But in fact, ultimately, the psukim do interrupt. It's not only talking about Shemitah. So with the due respect to the Eliyahu Mizrahi, inasmuch as one thing here leads to the next, it's not certain in any way, shape, and form that this has to be talking about Shemitah because the previous verses are talking about Shemitah because ultimately, we already interrupted the cadence. There was a pasuk that didn't speak about Shemitah. But Rashi is very certain. He knows this talking about Shemitah. How does he know that? And these are the Rebbe's questions. So question one is, Minayin l'Rashi, how is Rashi so certain that in Pshuta Shal Mikra we must say that V'asisim Schukosai V'esmishpatai V'esmishpatai Tishmeru, you got to do my statutes and keep my ordinances. How are you so certain that this refers to Kiyom Mitzvah Shemitah? How do you know it talks about Shemitah? B'nigud l'mashma usana Pshuta, in contrast to the literal meaning that it's do the mitzvahs. God's guarantee for security in Israel, Yiddishkeit. How about that? Everybody tries every which way. How about trying God's way? God promises, you do what I want,
and you'll live in the land of Israel. What's wrong with saying that? And maybe this is not a specific mitzvah. It's a general idea where Hashem is reminding us yet again. And all the times he reminded us actually didn't help so much. So can't say, why does he have to remind us again? Because we need many reminders. You do what I ask. You live in the land of Israel securely. So that's question one. And question two is in Rashi's commentary, he makes a point of sharing that little piece of trivia with us. Do you know why the Galut, the exile of Bavel, was 70 years? I'll tell you why. Because the people violated 70 Shemitot. Like, what does that information have to do with this? Well, how is it relevant? Rashi doesn't just usually load you up on chock full of information and trivia, so you can make sure you have enough to keep you busy. So here's something else to chew on, something else to smoke in your pipe and talk about, that the 70 years of Galut. But my nafkamina, what difference does this make in actual pshat and understanding the meaning of these verses? So the Rebbe explained that Divrei Rashi boyim liyashiv kushi b'kosov. There is an implicit question in this verse. It's a question mark. And Rashi feels compelled to explain the question. What's the question? It seems to be a straightforward reading. Do the mitzvahs stay in the land? Im omnam ha'yeshiva be'eretz teluya b'kiyam kol ha'mitzvahs. Let us accept this supposition. Okay. Keeping mitzvahs, living Yiddishkeit, keeps you in the land. That's what the pasuk seems to say. But keitzad nitan leimer v'yishavtem ala oretz lebetach. How could we say that you live there securely? Secure means no worries, no anxieties. What's wrong? Simple. Keep the mitzvahs. You'll live there securely. L'loich shash, without any concern or anxiety, the Rebbe says, what do you mean? Do you not know Jewish history? There's always a concern, a suspicion, an anxiety, a worry. We can always do sins. So if the guarantee of the land of Israel hinges on our observance of mitzvahs, we're in trouble. Why? Because people might not keep the mitzvahs. They always haven't. Throughout the entire journey of history, there have been Jews who didn't keep the mitzvahs. There have been Jews who did keep the mitzvahs. And those who didn't. And those who did, and those who didn't. It's always the way it was. In fact, there are those who argue that ever since we left Mitzrayim with the 80-20 split, that it's been 80-20 ever since. That 20% were really devout and committed, yeah, and 80% kind of weren't sure, didn't know what's going on. Or now, I don't know if that's true or not. That's just somebody's supposition. But it's possible. Maybe it was better numbers. Maybe once we got to 50%, I don't know. But there were always people who didn't keep mitzvahs. So secure means I have nothing to worry about. A secure investment is the blue chip bonds, nothing to worry about. Even if the market crashes, they'll still pay. Incidentally, those stocks and bonds don't make you a lot of money. Why? Because no risk. Or very low risk. The lower the risk, the lower the dividend. The bigger the risk, the bigger the dividend. Why? Simple. Why take a risk? Why should I take a risky investment when I can be secure? So the answer is, I'm going to take a risk for a reason. What's the reason? The bigger payout. I'm going to make more money. So the bigger the risk, the more you got to be paid for it. They say, I have a great investment for you. It doesn't pay very much, but there's a huge risk. You might not have any money left. Don't worry. You have a guarantee. You have a 2% return guaranteed. 75%, you're going to lose your money. Who would do that? But if somebody comes to you and he says, listen, it's a risky deal. 75% chance that you will not, you wake up tomorrow without your money. But there's a good 25% chance that you'll become an overnight millionaire. Would you invest that money? Many people would. Maybe collapsible income. They have an extra $5,000 that can turn into 50. So you know what? I'll take the risk. That's a lottery a little bit. But people buy lottery tickets. It's an expensive lottery ticket. So I'll take the risk. Person looks at it, analyzes. Yeah, I know the analysts are saying 75%. I think it's more like 60. I'm going to go for it. And then, of course, he succeeds, and he's so smart, and everybody can't get over what a smart guy he is. And then the next year, he fails and says, it wasn't me. I was really so smart, but everybody else did everything wrong. As is with success, as they say, is an illegitimate child, because everybody claims paternity, and failure, an orphan. Nobody knows where it came from. It was never me. But really, success comes from the Rebbeinu Shlomo. That's the emes. That's the truth. But at any rate, the point is this. Betochen, secure, no anxiety is something that's hard to come by. It's hard to come by. Is there any guarantee that any one of us is going to do Hashem's mitzvahs today? Guarantee? No. No? In fact, not only is it not a guarantee, it says, Hein le'yamin b'kadoshav. Even in the righteous, Hashem doesn't, so to speak, can't trust them. You know when it says, Hashem elikei Avram, elikei Yitzchak, after their passing. After their passing. Because really, if there is no concern of doing the wrong thing, then the mitzvahs aren't meaningful either. The only reason the mitzvahs are meaningful is because there remains freedom of choice. I could choose to do what Hashem wants, or chas v'shalom not to. And because there's a freedom to choose one way or the other, my mitzvahs are meaningful. And really, and truly, a person has to always be on guard. You always have to be on guard for your Yiddishkeit. Because it's so easy to slip and trip. It's so easy to ruin things. So if I always have to be on guard, it means I'm not secure. I'm on guard. So if I'm not secure because I'm on guard, how can Hashem promise v'yishavtem al ha'aretz lebetach? What's the guarantee? Mitzvahs? Yeah, there's no guarantee I'm going to do the mitzvahs. So this is a real question. It's a real question. V'lachein mefarash Rashi, therefore Rashi wants to suggest, shakavonis hakosov, that the intention of these verses is l'kiyum mitzvahs hashmita, refers to the keeping of Shemitah. Hanidrash, which is asked, expected, and demanded of us, pam b'sheva shanim bulvad, once in 7 years. Can't keep Shemitah in the third, fourth, and fifth, or sixth year. Only in the seventh year. So b'meshach sheish ha-shonim, shebein shnas ha-shmita l'shnas ha-shmita, from Shemitah to Shemitah, if you kept Shemitah right, what could you be sure of? You're guaranteed that Hashem is going to leave you protected in Israel. Why? Because the mitzvah of Shemitah shields us. I can't tell you have parnasa. I can't tell you have your health. But one thing I guarantee you, Israel is secure. Breathe easy now. 7 years, 6 years of security is done. As long as Shemitah was done right. In other words, the notion of levetach, of being sure of something, is very strange. Therefore, Rashi says, the only thing that would make sense is to suggest that even though we got interrupted with Einoah, that this goes back to Shemitah, and because Shemitah comes every 7 years, if everybody kept Shemitah right, you did buy yourself 7 years of security. That's something. So you have a high-risk investment, but if you get through the first year, then you're guaranteed a return. The only risk is the first year. Once you make it through, that's it. Six-year guarantee. You may lose it again in 7 years, but 6 years you're guaranteed for. Ah, now we understand why he's talking about Shemitah. Now we can understand and appreciate the idea of Levetach. Mibli lachshesh lechetshi over the galus. No sin will bring them to galus. They may sin, and it may bring other things, but galus won't bring. Why? Shemitah. Shemitah is the guarantee. And how do you know this? This is like a really big commitment. Is that really what Hashem promised? Is it that open and shut? Nothing's open and shut in Yiddishkeit. We know. The ways of Hashem are a mystery. Could you really be certain that if you keep Shemitah, guaranteed you'll be safe in Israel? Guaranteed no galus? Rashi says, yes, we can. How do you know? Well, history proves it. And that's from the fact that galus bavel was exactly 70 years. So, whatever the sins were, why 70 years exactly? And the answer is, this is 70 Shemitah violated, 70 years of galus. It's clear. 1 + 1 = 2. The math is, the arithmetic is pellucid, obvious, crystal clear. Dover hamechiach. This proves shahagolos hitetzah shal bittul mitzvah shmitah bilvad. That golos, not other things, but golos exile is the result of the violation of shmitah. And since galut, exilic reality, is resultant from shmitah, v'loy shal chatoyim achedim. That's why golos bavel, or the proof is that golos bavel is exactly 70 years, corresponding to exactly 70 shmitahot. So this is God's guarantee. Safe and secure. 6 years in which you can breathe easy and know that come what may, the land of Israel will not be harmed. We didn't listen. Even once. The haraya, the proof is, the 7 years of Golos Bavel.
What about the second Beis HaMikdash?
Second Beis HaMikdash, the concept of Shemitah, according to many opinions, was not even biblical anymore. It was only a rabbinic idea. According to many opinions, it was biblical. According to many, it wasn't. So, unfortunately, we didn't keep Shemitah that well either. Right? But here, already things changed. The first destruction of the Beis, the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash, that was really the end of the miraculous existence of Israel. After the second Beis HaMikdash was like the miracles of today. You know, it's miracles of Hanukkah, but not miracles of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Miracles of Purim, but not the miracles of Hashem's miraculous shielding us in the desert and giving us the manna and so on and so forth. So during the time of the second Beis HaMikdash, we had good times and bad times, but the corollary between doing that Hashem wants and between us benefiting wasn't seen. The Shekhinah wasn't with us. Second Beis HaMikdash is by and large, in many ways, a Golos Beis HaMikdash. This is a huge subject, kind of kicking over a hornet's nest, but anyway. That's... All right.
Okay, we're good. Thank you. And you can't keep.